Warning, the podcast you are about to listen to may have adult language and discuss adult themes not suitable for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised.
If you don't stay down and you never quit, come on over here and sit on the far end of the bench.
Welcome in, everybody. I know it's a little bit different. We're planning on releasing our episode on our new day now, Thursdays. Thank you guys for tuning in to the far end of the bench. Technically, episode 116. This is just going to be a little quick bonus. You'll see it up on the YouTube channel. You'll be able to hear it on our podcast feed. Also, we have Rev the Problem Coca. So you guys, it's either we're talking college football or we're talking MMA. And guess what? MMA. I didn't buy the pay-per-view, but I did get to watch it through a TikTok live. Shout out to the Chinese government because that was awesome. But we have a lot to talk about for the MMA and we did bring on Rev. Before we get into all that, follow at FEOTB pod on social media, follow us wherever you're listening to your podcast, and also check out the Variety Sports Network. That is our, we're presented by the Variety Sports Network. You can follow them at @variety_sports_. And we have a couple of sponsors that we'll talk about in this little segment here as well. But Nico, I'm excited. It was a good UFC event. And now we've had Rev on after the last big UFC pay-per-view. So we're bringing him back because the UFC is just dropping pay-per-views like candy. I'm pumped to talk about this one. It was a good card.
It's like, look, like how people give out candy on Halloween. Dana White just gives out great card after great card on pay-per-views. So, sorry, Red, to keep making you the workhorse here, but it looks like after every card, we're going to have your ass back here because it just does not stop coming with these hits, man. I mean, it just feels like that they cannot miss with the storylines. It's WWE storylines mixed with real martial arts. I mean, does it not get much better than this?
Well, yeah, speaking of that WWE storyline, who knows? Israel Adesanya, what if he goes to the WWE and all of a sudden Alex Pereira just follows him there and beats him in pro wrestling?
Walks him down, knocks him out, like always.
Yeah. That's just kind of like the running jokes on Twitter. It's like no matter where Israel Adesanya goes or what sport he joins, Alex Pereira is just going to be right behind him. He's just going to be that hater, just following him wherever he goes.
Well, we're going to save talking about the main event, but if he knew just that much more wrestling, he probably would have won that fight very easily because the round that he got him down, I was like, I thought it was going to be the end because Pereira looked like he was tired, but no, and apparently Izzy has Safeway bags for fists. He's not packing any power in those punches. And that's strange.
Did you not see the end of that first round?
No, I did, but did he finish him?
Herrera's got a chin also. So
he was getting rocked early on. We're starting with the undercard here. So I kind of, you know, not too familiar with most of these people, but I do know the main name, kind of star power, Dominic Reyes, Molly McCann, you could talk about just because of the international crowd, but Dominic Reyes fought John Jones for the light heavyweight championship, was giving him kind of a good fight early on. He actually got knocked out by Ryan Spann, who picks up a decent victory. It's kind of a resume builder here. Reyes is now more of a gatekeeper sitting at 12-4. Interested, Rev, where do you see Dominic Reyes fitting into this light heavyweight division now? We thought it was kind of more wide open. I kind of thought that he was going to get himself back into the title picture, but it doesn't seem to be trending that way. What are you seeing with him and his trajectory so far?
His trajectory is definitely one that if you're in his corner, you got to be very concerned with, which now his durability and just some of his vulnerabilities when it comes to him leaving his chin out there in the air and just getting smoked constantly is just something that's getting exploited more and more. And where Blachowicz took him out with, I believe it was like a kick punch combination. You know, he assaulted a body then broke his nose. And then now in the Yuri Prochazka fight, and then even more alarming is in this fight with Ryan Spann, and where the matchup, this is like a step down in competition, and he's still getting hit. He's still throwing naked kicks in distance where he could easily get punched in the face, which is what happened in this matchup. And it's definitely concerning where you could argue he beat John Jones in 2020, and he went from arguably being the division's champion to now. Like, you have to wonder if he even has the durability to hold up in this sport. Like, he's just been a complete 180 since that night in what, February of 2020?
Yeah, no, his chin is completely gone. Let's put it this way. I mean, Spann hit him with the left hand. I'm watching the highlight right now. Hit him with a left hand that was barely anything. And hit him over the top with the right. And then after that, it was lights out cold for him. He was not covering well at all. I mean, this guy, Dominic Reyes, seemed as though he took that John Jones fight like, oh, I'm the man. No, you got close to being the man. You're never the man. You weren't the man. You still aren't the man. Because think about this. What was it? 2 years ago, two short years ago, this guy was a co-main event on a big-time pay-per-view. This guy isn't even the headliner on the prelims, and he gets bitch-slapped, basically. And Spann comes in, who's a hell of a fighter. Dude's got some power in his fist, and just knocks him out cold, head banging against the canvas. I mean, like I said, Dominic Reyes, look, it might be time to go to a PFL. let's keep it buck here, buddy, because I don't know how much longer you're going to be in around in this light heavyweight division.
Oof, yeah, no, that was a rough knockout. That referee should have got in there a little bit sooner. You don't need to play basketball with his forehead. That wasn't necessary. In his last four fights, he's on a four-fight losing streak, going back to that 2020 matchup against John Jones, lost by unanimous decision, and then KO by Blachowicz, like Rev mentioned, KO by Prochaska, like he mentioned, and then now this latest addition right to the top of the back of the head. I mean, kind of landed in the spot where we see a lot of people go down, but that just wasn't – he landed 12 total strikes in the fight. It wasn't like he was even getting geared up to kind of put on a performance. I would say that it was going to happen one way or the other. That finish seemed inevitable. Once you saw those two guys moving around in the octagon, you saw one guy that was circling like a shark and one guy that was just trying to kind of stay above water. And he didn't stay above water. That was very violent of a knockout. Let's talk about the Erin Blanchfield, Molly McCann fight. Obviously Molly McCann, big international audience. And then she's also very popular through her work with Barstool Sports and Dave Portnoy, her relationship there with those guys. Erin Blanchfield, though, very tough prospect. Molly McCann was a heavy underdog, and it showed when you saw this fight, round one submission by a Kimura, and it wasn't ever really even close to being anything. 93 total strikes landed by Blanchfield compared to 7 of Molly McCann. Total domination. I just don't know what else you could talk about.
Blanchfield, I don't think he even broke a sweat, if we're being honest.
Like it
was an all-out dominant performance. And Molly McCann, look, there was a lot of hype on her, obviously, with being training with Patty Pimblett, Patty the Batty over there, and having a good following, and people and myself. I didn't know who Erin Blanchfield was. I threw money on Molly because I was a heavy underdog. I was like, you know, if I can get this money here, why not? But Blanchfield showed why she is one of the persons that people are talking about being in this flyweight division that could be the next person up in this division that could be contending here for a title shot in the near future. She, like I said, dominant performance, getting untouched like that against a big name. Like I said, look, it's not a massive name, don't get me wrong, but it's a big name in terms of names or faces on the sport. So like I said, it was a statement win, and Blanchfield, I said, untouched. We could see her back in 2 months going after another person. Like this is a fight where keep riding this momentum. Absolutely.
Yeah. And she's on an undefeated streak here in the UFC. I think that's 4 wins now. And she's had the hype. ESPN comes out with a list every year of top fighters under the age of 25. And Erin Blanchfield cracked that list. She doesn't have the hype that Molly McCann had. So this fight kind of felt like a setup fight in that case where, you know, Molly McCann is finally starting to get some popularity, you know, being, you know, basically a part of that Patty Pimblett, Barstool entourage kind of rubbed off on her. And all of a sudden, you know, she being a charismatic person herself, people were finally starting to like track onto her, and McCann finally started to get some popularity. And they gave her a tough matchup against, you know, where as McCann's weaknesses can be dealing with those pressure grapplers, you're going to give her a young prospect and, you know, a very dynamic offensive grappler in Erin Blanchfield, who, She picks up her second in a row submission victory. She took her down, passed her guard with relative ease, and basically ripped McCann's arm off and took it home with her. So big win. It put Blanchfield on a map, taking out a popular name. And now she's going to get more, she's going to get more attention in her next matchup as one of the more notable prospects in this division.
That's one of those matchups, like one of those performances. I know you remember those days, Rev, where like a wrestler goes out there and like beats somebody too fast, and then the referee or the coach go tells them, okay, go ride the bike for 45 minutes so we can work up a sweat and actually stay in shape here, because that wasn't worth our time. That it was worth Erin Blanchfield's time, because I agree, this was a win-win scenario for the UFC. Molly McCann wins, great, because she's got the following already, and hopefully she continues to get better, because that would be a very lucky victory if it did happen. But now you get Erin Blanchfield to be seen in front of a live audience on the undercard, so it wasn't behind pay-per-view on ESPN Plus and the ESPN networks. It was a win-win scenario, so Dana set himself up for cash on either side, and I would say that that's going to be Erin Blanchfield the next time that she fights. She's going to have a lot more hype and maybe even cracks main card of a UFC or possibly a co-main event of a fight night. Those are possibly some steps that I could see being taken.
Yeah, she's only 23 years old, and she fights with a lot of, you know, like a cool, calm, collected composure. She kind of has like a kind of just even-keeled personality, where she seems very mature as someone who's 23 and fights in a mature manner as well, and very dynamic submission artist.
She's only 23, and she's winning fights like this. What are we all doing?
No kidding.
We're starting to inch closer to that age. Rev and I were talking.
I think we've already passed that.
No, I know. But Rev and I were talking about Jordan Mailata, and then I brought up Jordan Davis. We're like, oh shit, these guys are like 6'6 and 385 pounds. And my age.
We got 20-year-olds playing the NFL now.
that's bad. I don't like that. Anything else, Rev, stick out from the prelims before we get into the main card and start talking about the meat of this UFC pay-per-view?
Well, it was just an all-around great performance, not only during the fight for Renato Moicano, being able to, you know, land with better intensity against an experienced kickboxer, Brad Riddell, just kind of hit him, land some good long-distance shots, got him down, and got the quick submission with the rear naked choke, which is his specialty submission, in which I believe all of his submission wins is that. Moicano looked good during the fight. Now, I don't know if you saw his promo afterwards, but he had the FCC working overtime just with all the F-bombs he was throwing. You know, him being a Brazilian and how quickly he's learning English, in which he rips a better promo than 90% of the American fighters. And English is his second language. And yeah, it's going to bring Moicano some attention for his next fight.
I will say the other thing that stood out for me, we had an undefeated guy on the early prelims, a guy who, if people forgot the story about the fighter in the Fight Island Hotel that brought his girl up with him, that was Otman Alzatar. He was a guy that in 2020 brought his girlfriend up, and he got cut for that reason and didn't get on the fight card. And he came back. This is the first fight back in the UFC. He was a 13-0 fighter and faced a dude, Matt Rivola, who was from Queens, that was a Mets fan, that sang the Mets, that walked out to Edwin Diaz's music. Right then and there, I knew he was winning that fight. So I thought that was a pretty entertaining fight too. So against the undefeated guy, it was a big win for Matt Rivola.
I was going to say, I can't find an undefeated fighter. Oh, there it is. Yeah, 13-1 now. 13-1. let's move on to the main part of UFC 281, what we were all kind of excited about. Lightweight kicked things off. Claudio Puelles and Dan Hooker. Dan Hooker just sticking around, kind of near, always circling the title picture, sometimes getting himself close to being in it, but then, you know, he catches a right hand from hell from Michael Chandler and suddenly falls like six steps down the ladder. But he gets the win this time, KO victory in the second round over Claudio Puelles. It was a slugfest, and it just continued on from there. Both guys landed great shots. Both guys were hurt at different times. One of the more entertaining fights that I can remember kicking off a UFC pay-per-view, but let's just kind of talk about it. Dan Hooker now 22-12, stops his two-fight losing streak that he was on, where does this kind of put him in the stratosphere of the lightweight division, which is a shark tank, and we all know that, and is controlled by the alpha shark right now?
I'd say this win really just keeps him around the top 10. I don't know if Dan Hooker has a run in him to put him in a position to fight for a title anymore, but he could definitely win some matchups here, which if he goes up against an opponent in Poyas, who really wasn't ready to do anything besides die for heel hooks, then yeah, he kind of pick him apart, abuse his body, and kind of use that long range, that 75-inch reach, that six feet tall frame, and just pick him apart, which he did. And going on the side of Claudio Poyas, it was just, even though he came close to landing the heel hook in the first round, outside of that, it was really a humiliating performance in which he kind of just looked too timid to even like exchange with Hooker on the feet. And from there, once he didn't get that knee bar, or once he couldn't get the heel hook, he was just going constantly, like not finishing his takedowns, in which, who knows, maybe if he tried to finish the shot, it would have put him in a better position rather than getting a shot entry, then flopping to his back, attempting a shot, then flopping to his back, and then just being stuck on the feet. And just, it seemed like he quit at the end. It's just humiliating performance. Poyas has potential. Hopefully he goes back, watches his fight, and is just, you know, disgusted watching it. And yeah, good win for Hooker, but just a disappointing showing for Poyas, if you ask me.
I'm never going to say a guy had no will to win and did not want to be there at all, because you never know what's going on in the fighter's mind. But a KO with a stomach kick that halfway landed, I think, is as embarrassing as it comes. And look, Dan Hooker, before this fight, had won one fight in 2 years. And he's
this was supposed to be a gatekeeper matchup.
He's fought five times, and he's won one fight in 2 years, and he gets his win, where in all honesty, like Rev hit the nail on the head, Claudio just tried to try to take him down eight times, 0-for-8. I mean, it's not working.
And it was like a half-hearted shot where it's like he didn't try to finish the double, like he would just get it on the shot and then flop to his back.
They were very generous. They probably could have gave more than eight. They were like, you know what, we'll just say he fell and slipped on a couple of these and not say eight. But yeah, this is a fight, Dan Hooker. Look, good for you. You finally got a little bit of confidence back. But like I said, this division is the who's who in the UFC right now. It's not a point where Dan Hooker can pat someone on the back like, oh, I'm ready to fight another big dog, because that performance is just another fight that Dana White's going to look at and be like, you still need a gatekeeper match. Like, that wasn't nothing. You just showed me that this dude was nothing that you just fought. I'm not ready to put you back in there and get your head taken off by some of these other dogs.
It's kind of saving him from himself, because if he goes, it just the two guys that are in the fight that we have coming up, Chandler and Poirier, both. We know what Chandler did to Dan Hooker, and Poirier's been so good for so long that Dan Hooker has never even come close to sniffing him. I unless they have fought in the past, and I'm totally blanking on that, but that's just my feelings and looking at the divisional rankings here in lightweight. Dan Hooker not in the top 10, so he
took a fight down at featherweight, you know, drained his body down, trying to make a weight that he hadn't made since like 2014, but yeah, now he's back at lightweight.
It's a strange – I think that the UFC was kind of banking on him to lose to Poirier and then be able to kind of catapult Poirier from there, but it didn't work out for them. And they're kind of stuck with what Dan Hooker already is and what everybody already knows he is. That's the unfortunate thing.
Yeah, to say one more thing about Poirier is if the UFC gives him another chance to just outright cut him after that performance, he's going to have to learn like another skill set to become – something more than just a leg locker, because we've seen people in the UFC, we've seen the Ryan Halls, the Ian Entwistles, the Paul Sasses, the people whose games were specifically based off of like leg locks and bottom game jiu-jitsu submissions, in which if Poirier doesn't build off his game and at least get some confidence to at least exchange on the feet and throw some punching combinations and to get confident in striking, then he's going to fade out. People are going to figure him out after maybe they defend a heel hook or two. He's going to get exposed and he's going to get beaten down. So he's going to need to learn something from this performance. It should sting him so that he gets better from this, in which if he doesn't become anything more than just a leg locker, then he's going to get broken.
Yep, and I think now that we're at a good spot, we can kind of move forward. And then the second fight on the card was, we all knew that it was going to be Frankie Edgar's last fight. And the UFC did him no favors, kind of like, oh, thank you for all your work, Frankie. Here's a lion who's going to take your head off on the way out. Yeah, no, and here's a subscription, since we're getting close to the holiday season. You get $50 and a subscription to the Jelly of the Month Club. Thank you for your service, Frankie Edgar. All those years, the championship runs that you had, the miles that you put on your body, and Chris Gutierrez just kneed his face, almost caved his face in, kind of like Cyborg Santos a couple years ago, just getting his face caved in. It was not pretty.
Definitely not pretty at all.
Yeah, I mean,
Hugo, look, Nico.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'll touch on this first. I know we can talk about, we can hype up Frankie all the while, but let me talk about the Inglewood kid, the guy out of Factory X Muay Thai, El Guapo, they call him, Chris Gutierrez. Look, did this guy a number next to his name? The man
did
is
he
on
get permission from Boss Rutten to use El Guapo?
I don't know, but you know what?
The
dude has won 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 out of his last eight fights with a draw. Dude, get him a damn number next to his name. The dude is an animal. I mean, look, whether it be the leg kicks, he's won by a leg kick, he's won by a knee, he's won by a knockout. Like, this guy deserves his roses. And look, Frankie, you picked a bad day to show up, to bad guy to pick to be your last fight, because this was as dominant as a performance as I've seen Chris fight in a while. I mean, look, everyone was there for Frankie. Everyone was there knowing that his last fight, this is his last chance to see Frankie Edgar, blah, blah. He revolutionized sport, which he did. I'm not saying he didn't. But Gutierrez came in and was like, you know what? This is my time. It is my time. He didn't waste a round. He was lying on his feet, and he was ready to roll. And man, Frankie has gotten knocked out 4 out of the last 5 fights that he's fought. And ever since losing that title fight to Max Holloway back in 2019, it was a long, long overdue. I think he should have hung him up after that Holloway fight, because I don't know if you guys remember the knockout picture of his last fight before he fought Frankie, or sorry, before he fought Gutierrez. His face looked like goddamn Frogger from the video game, Nintendo video game. Because his face was so badly contorted. And then on Saturday night, a dude had his nose taken off by a knee. I mean, you got kids
in the front row. Kids in the front row with t-shirts of his face on them. And then his face didn't look like that.
You gotta know, it's time, buddy. I'm laughing at this ESPN picture of damage. It's Frankie Edgar's head lit up in red, and nothing else lit up at all for anyone else, because all Gutierrez threw was punches and that flying knee, and his list just got lit the fuck up.
Yeah, definitely not a nice way to say goodbye to Frankie. For Gutierrez, you know, technical kickboxer, kicks like a mule. You know, very patient, composed, very well layered game. And now he has the biggest name on his resume. Here, and a former champion. Yeah, it was an over the hill Frankie Edgar, but it's Frankie Edgar. So now he has on his resume, and hopefully now he gets some top 15 matchups. But to go on the side of Frankie Edgar here is just like when you saw the matchup start and he's going up against, you know, a bantamweight here, in which he used to fight at lightweight, and now the bantamweights he's fighting are bigger than him. And not only is Gutierrez bigger than him, but also faster than him. You know, Frankie usually having the advantage of being that light on his feet, always bouncing around guy, going up against the faster guy, doesn't have the chin that he used to have. You know, the legendary chin that gone through the great Maynard fight, he doesn't have the chin anymore. He's a slower guy. He's a smaller guy. Like, he didn't have any advantages here, and it was a cruel matchup, and there was just no way he was going to get out of it. And yeah, he took a Mortal Kombat knee to the face, and yeah, it wasn't very nice.
No, not very nice at all, but I mean, I hope that it wasn't Frankie Edgar who picked Gutierrez to go and be his last fight. And Why put your kids in the front row of the fight?
Gutierrez has literally knocked out his last three opponents of some sort, and you just said, you know what, I got embarrassed, and my face got plastered all over fucking Twitter, and you know what, let me go face a guy that also is knockout power with his knee, with his legs, that got him, the dude has goddamn tree trunks for legs, and you just said, you know, let's do it again. Let's go three rounds here with this guy.
Gutierrez looked like he could have fought like Poirier and Chandler. I don't know how he makes 135.
I don't know either. But like I said,
but he gave him
a number next to his fucking name.
Yeah, he's putting in work the right way. I mean, 19-3-2 record. He's got solid professional experience. Now it's not like he's going to get surprised by anybody if you put him in those top 15 matchups. I think that's probably the trajectory of where he should go. So a big win for him. And I didn't realize that he was an Engle guy. I know you said we had a local guy on, but I couldn't.
Yeah,
I didn't
put two and two together. My dad also has his lawyer, so that helps.
Oh, yeah.
And he trains with
Mark Montoya and Factory X.
Mark Montoya, Busy B, Amara Correa, Jiu-Jitsu, where my dad trains out too. So, yeah, I have a little bit of a homer there.
There you go.
Can probably tell from my voice from how I talked about him.
Moving on to what was a great three-round kind of war in the lightweight division. I guess if you want to say that, it looks like Michael Chandler went through a war. Did you guys see the video he posted on his social media talking to his kids in the mask? Yeah. And his foot is so swollen. Just, props to him, though, because he did go on Busy with the Boys 2 days after getting his face worked in and choked out in front of millions and millions of people in his underwear. I don't know what to make of Michael Chandler. I all I can say is I kind of wish that he was in the UFC when he was younger. But his fights have been really, really entertaining, even the ones that he's losing.
He's losing and great fashion. The dude has I'm pretty sure his last couple fights in the UFC that he's lost have been fight of the nights. Yeah. I mean, look, this division is just fucking unreal. Let's just say it as it is. This division is the best in the UFC. It's not even close. 1-6 can all beat each other at any point in the time between Oliveira, Gaethje, Poirier, and Makhachev. Obviously, I don't know why we're fucking double champing this division when there's literally murder's row of opponents for Makhachev. But I mean, there's like I said, look, it's a weird spot to be in because Michael Chandler's undersized for this division. I'll say it. He's undersized for this division. Let's be honest. He's
thicker than a Snicker, dude.
He's thicker. He's thick, but he's much smaller.
He built like a fire hydrant. He's listed at 5'9". The UFC isn't always accurate with the height list, man. So I'd have to guess he's like 5'6".
I'm pretty sure they give him a couple inches. Yeah, they're very, very generous with that. Like, if I'm Michael Chandler, why the fuck would you try not to move down to the league? Like, let's just keep it a buck here.
He'd have to cut his leg off.
He's a beefcake. I don't know.
But give me Michael Chandler versus Volkanovski, for fuck's sake. Well, those two, that would be one hell of a fight. If you're going
to
talk about
anybody, yeah, him, because he used to be 300
pounds. Because Volk did it too. Volk was fucking massive too. And let's be honest, Chandler is not – unless Chandler wants to play this ring around the rosy of who's going to win on any given night in this division, then he's not going to ever touch UFC gold. And that was his goal when he came to the UFC because he had won elsewhere. And the one thing he's been missing is that UFC gold. And let's be honest, I don't know how much I like his chances after what his chin has shown. I'm a Michael Chandler fan. I absolutely am. I think he's a hell of a fighter. He's entertaining as fuck. But it's a murder's row of opponents in this division. And if I'm him, I'm thinking, why the fuck would I not try to cut that low and try to go after Volkanovski? Because I mean, that'd be a hell of a fight.
Yeah, sometimes I wonder exactly what his motive is, if it is still to become a champion or just to put on entertaining fights. Because at this point, with both these guys at lightweight, I don't see these guys really – they're going to have to take a hard route to even get back into a title shot. Maybe they schedule Poirier versus Makhachev, but I don't know if they'll just be so quick to do that with guys like Rafael Fiziev and Beneil Dariush hanging around. And, of course, Alexander Volkanovski right there, just with how good and how in good form he looks right now. But, yeah, just to go back to talk about this fight, it was just interesting to see just the way the tides kept turning. Michael Chandler coming out early and putting Poirier on the back foot, in which he doesn't seem to have any way to like conserve his energy. He's just, as soon as the fight goes, he just balls to the wall. He just pushes Poirier back. He's landing flurries, you know.
Those punches are too much energy.
Yeah. Wastes a little too much energy going for a suplex. And then Poirier is able to land a couple shots and maybe even steal the first round. Round two comes around and Chandler pulls out the bag of dirty tricks. He takes him down. He's punching him in the back of the head. He's blowing bloody snot rockets in his face. And just, it's just, he was even fish hooking Dustin Poirier in the mouth, at which Poirier said it while he's being interviewed by Rogan, he was getting fish hooked. You can see in a replay, like Chandler just literally doing anything he could to win, just like every dirty trick he could go to, he went for it, took him down, and it still wasn't enough. Round three comes around, he loses the scramble and gets choked down. It's just, when you get these two people in there, there's no way the fight was going to be a dud. It was going to be entertaining, and it kind of keeps them in the same place, really. Like, Poirier has always kind of been that top contender, and Chandler has just always been the guy who, he's going to give a top 10 fighter a run for their money because he's so explosive. He's like a dynamo, and he doesn't waste his energy at all. He's coming at you, so it kind of keeps them where they're at, and yeah, good, exciting fight, and you could just schedule them with any lightweight there in the top 10, you're going to get an exciting fight out of it.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think, in all honesty, as we're watching this fight, like, I think Poirier knew he was going to fucking do that. Like, I think he knew exactly what Chandler's game plan was. He's going to throw the whole bag in the kitchen sink at you. And at some point, those punches are going to stop deteriorating. At some point, he's going to leave openings. And he did. And he took a full advantage of it. I mean, like I said, Chandler came into this thinking, like, you know what, I'm going to come for the swing. Poirier came in like, you know what, this guy's going to throw everything at me. I know I have the chin. I know I have the wrestling to match him. Like, I know I can figure my way into this and get to his back and get the rear neck and choke. I mean, like I said, it's the mastery of Poirier and the experience of being in the UFC. Like I said, Chandler could do that to dudes and other companies, because other companies weren't as masterful and weren't as prepared as these UFC guys are with the different training camps and the different repertoire they have. That's why they call it the big leagues. I mean, there's a lot of different things this division can go, but like I said, Poirier is a name that'll always be around. And like I said, it's going to be interesting what they do with both of these guys. Do you give Chandler a gate keeper fight and give him Dariush? Because I think he could take Dariush's head off, if I'm being honest with you. I don't know about that. And then Poirier, do you put him back in the title picture? Like, there's a lot of different directions you can go with all this.
Dustin Poirier, Rocky 3, Michael Chandler. Ain't so bad. I was watching some of those punches that he was landing. He was throwing them with everything. Like, they were landing hard, snapping Dustin Poirier's head around.
He wasn't throwing no light punches.
When they made contact, it was just boom. It was like his head was in a washing machine. But he weathered the storm, and then he put on a boxing clinic of his own. That clean 1-2 initially that put Chandler to the ground, this was a playground fighter versus a prize fighter. That's what it turned out to be. And the prize fighter not only knocked him to the ground, but then also got onto his back and made you tap out, put you to sleep. Another dominant performance, Wei Li Zhang, I can't remember how you're supposed to put the two names in order, beats Carla Esparza, regains the women's strawweight title, 23-3 on her career, and it was pretty much total domination. Gets a rear naked choke in the second round, about a minute in, and is back in control of that division. Where do we think it was this kind of, What was your guys' feeling going into this fight, if there were any? I mean, I didn't necessarily really believe in Carla Esparza. I feel like that was kind of a feel-good moment when she won the title, but she wasn't going to be holding on to it for years on end like we've seen in the past.
Yeah, like, my feelings in this matchup were just, well, if it goes longer, or the longer the fight goes, Wei Li is a finishing threat here. Carla Esparza, you know, she's a gritty person, you know, fights as hard as she can on the feet, you know, is a good wrestler, but ultimately she struggles to finish a lot of people. And Wei Li is going to be the one who's coming on late is going to have the more finishing power, whether it's early on in the fight or late in the fight. She's just a more dynamic athlete and a more physically gifted person. That played out in the fight. On the feet, it wasn't competitive at all. And on the ground, it was competitive. There were moments where Esparza was winning scrambles and won out some positions here and there, but ultimately, Wei Li is a more dynamic fighter, and it played out. Esparza fought as hard as she could, but those are just two different tiers of athletes.
Yeah, with Wei Li, I mean, look, when I was watching that fight, I wasn't a doubt of how Esparza has a chance here. It was how Wei Li wanted to finish the fight, in my opinion. Wei Li never gave her a chance to breathe, I'm pretty sure. And that whole first round and halfway through the second round as well, it seemed as though Esparza tried so many different things, tried to get moves on the ground, tried to get some holds here and there. But Wei Li was like, no. I'm stronger than you. I'm bigger than you. I'm faster than you. Anything you're going to throw at me, I'm going to match it right there. And you're not going to have one chance to breathe lightly in this situation. And like I said, it was a good win for Esparza over Rose. Absolutely. And I think she does deserve another shot. It's interesting. But like Wei Li, you cannot say enough good things about Wei Li. It's just that one person that she just struggles with. It's Thug Rose. It's weird, right? It's just weird. The two losses to Thug Rose. I mean, if there's one person that's a kryptonite, it's her. And I expect Rose and Wei Li to come back again, and we see that fight again happen.
Yeah, and I won't be surprised if Wei Li won that next one, because who knows where Rose's headspace is at. Like, absolutely. You know, like, I'm watching this fight, and I'm wondering if Rose's head wasn't in her ass in that last fight, if she actually put her foot on the pedal and then they go into full-on defense mode, like, why couldn't she do what Wei Li did to Carla Esparza? She had to have been watching that fight. And you have to wonder if they do a trilogy fight here between Wei Li and Rose. And honestly, this time, if Rose is in the right headspace, yeah, interesting matchup, but I think I would pick Wei Li to win.
I would like to see a rematch. I think that Wei Li didn't have the best performance, and it might have been because Rose is that much better of a fighter, but I don't necessarily – I honestly think that matchup is a lot closer and should be a lot closer each time, where somebody different could win every time that you get a fight. I guess it's a – very good win, and she's a very good champion, and looking forward to seeing what she does next, because everything that she's done so far has been dynamic. Those two Yan Jacek fights, the first one especially, that's one of my all-time favorites. I'd go back and watch that whenever I have a chance, just because it was so dynamic. And I do like to see a little alien hump on Yan Jacek's face, because Wei Li hits so hard. She hit so damn hard, she gave her a hematoma on the top of her forehead. Oh my God. Yeah.
That's what five rounds of Wei Li does. And like I said, it was an all out war. That way, anytime you step in with Wei Li, it's a war, and you're gonna know that you fought her after the fight. Even if you lose, like that split decision fight, I forgot if it was the first or second time with Rose, it could have gone either way too. So like there's a real conversation to be had, like, because look, Joanna's out of the picture. She's doing modeling now. Esparza is probably the only other person in this division as of right now. There's a few up and comers, but it could be another. Just, I think that's the fight to make. That's, if you're Dana White, it's a fight to make, or unless you want to give Esparza another rematch.
Well, outside of that, there's Amanda Lemos who had that TKO victory, right, a couple weeks ago. Marina Rodriguez. Jessica Andrade hasn't fought in a while, but she's around. Beat Lemos with a standing arm triangle choke. So it'd be interesting to see. You know, she has a physicality, and who knows? Maybe if Andrade and Wei Li fight again, the fight's not going to end again in 1 minute. Like, Andrade has a physicality to make a fight between her and Wei Li Zhang very interesting. So if not, Rose Namajunas, you have Amanda Lemos right there, and you have Jessica Andrade, a former champion too. So you got a couple ways to go here.
Going to get exciting in the women's strawweight division. But Wei Li Zhang recaptures the strawweight title in the co-main event. And then that leads us to, it was a very dominant performance. It was kind of back and forth at times, but up until the last round, the last minute of the fourth round, where Paheya started to kind of land on him, and then going into the fifth round, totally flipped the entire dynamic of the fight. Up until that, it was Adesanya's fight to lose. And boy, did he lose it. Oh, my word. I just wasn't what I was expecting. I thought that, okay, the loss to Blachowicz makes sense because when you saw them in the octagon, whether they were close to the – they were not close to the same weight at all. I mean, Adesanya barely has to do anything to make middleweight, and Blachowicz cuts from 235 down to 205. There was no way that he was going to be able to win that fight if Blachowicz got him to the ground. And then just to see the way that he kind of crumbled in the championship moment wasn't what I was expecting from Israel Adesanya. It's not something that we've seen from him. And it's the same guy. Maybe it is some sort of weird kryptonite or mental chi thing that Praia has over him. But currently, that's your boogeyman. You're going to have to find a way to get over your boogeyman.
And there absolutely was that in the back of his head, because there's no doubt Izzy needed two more minutes or three more minutes left until he won that fight. Like it was a 3-1 with that fourth round going to Pereira into that fifth round. And like I said, Pereira was like, you know what? Like if he wants to sit around and he wants to fuck around and be like, I'm this, I'm that, I'm the guy around here, I'm gonna fuck him up. That's exactly what happened. Look, Izzy's cockiness got to him. That's exactly all this was. He thought that, you know what? I'm gonna coast my way into this fifth round and prove why I'm still pound for pound number one right now. And he is no longer that. And right now there are some up for grabs for that title, absolutely. But man, talk about resilience. Pereira, like I said, get his ass beat for those three rounds and that fourth round, that turnaround. I mean, he knew that Izzy was gonna get to that point, and Izzy killed himself. Not killed himself, but shot himself in the foot, trying to be cocky, trying to coast his way to win it to those last two rounds. We're like, you know what? I can just win because I can win on points. And he was able to do that against other opponents. Because Pereira, unlike Pereira, those other fighters were in his head. This guy has been in his head. He's the one guy that has looked Izzy down to the face and been like, you know what, I'm better than you. It doesn't matter if it's kickboxing, it doesn't matter if MMA. He said, I'm better than you, and came in and did that. Look, there's zero doubt that Izzy will get another shot here. And if I'm being honest with you, I'd expect Izzy probably to win the rematch because of how more well-rounded he is as a fighter. But like I said, it's the boogeyman. You said it perfect, Jimmy. It's the boogeyman. And this is a hurdle that the great ones have to get over. And if Izzy wants to be that guy, wants to be known as one of the greats in this sport, he's going to have to get over his demons. And one of those being Alex Pereira.
Yeah, without a doubt. I think this fight's an example of just what happens when you not only won, keep a power puncher around in a fight for too long. And two, what happens when you give them space and you continue to keep backing up? And well, I know it's a bit of a hindsight tape because Adesanya was winning stretches of this fight off of his back foot, having Pereira stalk him down. And he was winning off the back foot. But ultimately, when you give a power puncher that much space to figure out something over the span of 25 minutes, he's going to find a punch. He's going to find an upper. He's going to find something. And yeah, and that's ultimately what happened. Adesanya was doing a good job of, you know, winning just enough exchanges on the feet to give him the lead, that 3-1 lead heading into round five. And then the moments in which they were in the clinch, landing some good stuff and taking him down and getting him in that little wrist-right position and land some effective ground and pound. But ultimately, when you give a power puncher that much space by backing up over and over and allowing them to stick around and not going for the kill shot opportunities when he could. And maybe there was that unfortunate moment in round one where when he finally did hurt Pereira, it was at the end of the round. But ultimately, just kind of keeping him around and staying on the back foot is what gave him the loss, even though he was winning doing that. But Pereira is just such a power puncher that he's going to find something eventually.
Yeah, Rev, I do want you, because I thought it was interesting when you brought it up before we started recording. I want the listeners to be able to hear it too. You mentioned there might be some sort of Nigerian curse because of the way Usman lost his title and now Adesanya lost his title in similar fashions.
Yeah, without a doubt there. You look at it and they're heading into round five with a 3-1 lead, both of them, and they can win if they I'm not gonna go all the way on the ledge that Nico went and say that Adesanya coasted, because honestly, that he was kind of fighting the same fight to kind of tap in, do enough to land and win, but don't sell out. But yeah, both Izzy and Usman heading into round five with 3-1 leads, they give their opponent a little bit of space and they find an opening on the feet, which puts them out. And it's a curse. Both of them are going to get immediate rematches to see if they can right those wrongs. But yeah, there's a bit of a curse there. Adesanya's going to get his immediate rematch. As for Alex Pereira, it's almost like, it feels like a Brock Lesnar type of run where you got a guy who had a very good, background in their own respected combat sport. You know, Lesnar being what I believe was a two-time national champion wrestler, Pereira being a two-way champion in Glory, them being very accomplished at their own respective discipline, but then getting quickly launched into the UFC and then only a few fights winning the championship. So it really feels like a Brock Lesnar type run where you have guys with a very limited one-dimensional skill set just kind of just going on these bizarre runs.
We're just going to skip over the fact that Brock Lesnar beat Undertaker and Dwayne The Rock Johnson in the span of 3 months.
Yeah, I mean, talking about WWE champion, I think Alex Pereira would love to be mentioned in the same name as Brock Lesnar's career and how much money he's made over the span of his career. But man, look, that 3-1 lead, everyone loves that 3-1 lead, don't you? Those 3-1 leads can come back to bite you in the ass. It doesn't matter if it's UFC, it doesn't matter if it's hockey, it doesn't matter if it's basketball, 3-1 leads come back to bite you in the ass. I mean, like I said, I would not say he was coasting. I think that was the wrong word to use. I think he was. It wasn't more coasting. It was more willing to win the fight with the judges' scorecards, because he knew he was winning the judges' scorecards with Leon for Usman and then also Izzy with Pereira here. And like I said, when you have dangerous fighters like Pereira is, where he won't stop and his cardio is incredible from his past experience, I mean, like it's an end all be all. Like I said, I expect Izzy to come back. I do expect you could easily put Izzy and Usman on the same card. Just give them both rematches on the same card. Talk about a fucking card to be all cards. That would be incredible. I mean, like there's a lot of fireworks you can fight with these, because both of them are deserving of rematches. And Izzy obviously was one of pound for pound guys. But it's just this one dude. It really is this one dude. And look, all I'm gonna say is if Usman does win again, and the one thing that I was always wanting to happen that could never happen because the way these two divisions were set up, so I always wanted Usman to go for that double champ, and he was never gonna do it with Izzy. He absolutely never was gonna do it. And maybe Pereira gets him twice somehow and knocks him off twice. And I would love to see Usman try to go after him as well. There's so many different things you can fight with all these dudes mixed around, and like I said, Izzy's a hell of a fighter, but Pereira, like I said, he when Pereira knew in the back of his mind that he thinks he's won this fight, it's not over. That's when the time changed. That he thought he won this fight on the scorecards. Okay, this guy is going to try to go to the scorecards. I'm not going to let him get there. That's exactly the mindset Pereira had, and that's how he won the fight.
There's a difference between fighting to win and fighting not to lose. And you saw a transition there when he got rocked at the end of the fourth round. Adesanya changed from fighting to win to fighting not to lose. And that normally is the result when that happens. I'm going to have that lecture tomorrow with one of the wrestlers that I'm coaching, where you're wrestling, you have to wrestle to win and you can't wrestle not to lose because you're afraid of making a mistake. And I think that he made a mistake, got clipped, and then it just petrified him for the fifth round.
Yeah, and he was kind of doing the equivalent of the wrestler, kind of skating around, kind of like the outsides of the
stalling.
Yes, staying just out of bounds, just kind of waiting for you to shoot and capitalize. And yeah, just kind of playing that backflip game in which, yeah, he's, give him credit, he did a good job of winning the fight off the back foot. Ultimately, Adesanya's a better fighter in open space. Like, try to back Pereira more. Like, he has some power in the strike, so he's back him up a little bit. Like, yeah, he might have been winning doing that, but ultimately, a power puncher giving him that much space and that much real estate, he's gonna connect on you eventually, and that's what happened. And yeah, going into the rematch, if I'm Eugene Behrman, I'm going to tell Israel Adesanya that, like, you had this in the bag, but stop backing up so much. Like, give him something to respect and, you know, meet him in the center of the cage.
Would be one of the strategies that he could use. It would have changed the entire fight completely. I think we've talked this card to death. I think that it was good that we got all of that in there, though. I know I told you we have like 15 minutes, but when we started, we got going and it just continued on from there. So we appreciate you coming on and doing this little quick MMA segment. Before we kind of wrap things up here, though, did want to mention it was a sad story, kind of a sudden story. Not many people, I think, expected it, but Anthony Rumble Johnson, former light heavyweight championship contender, fought DC for the title a couple times, passed away over the weekend. I didn't necessarily see any of the details as to why, but it was definitely a very sudden and a very sad story. A guy that a lot of people have very solid and genuinely happy stories when they come into contact with him. Seemed like he always had a smile and tried to make everybody's day better. So unfortunately, he passed on. So rest in peace to him, and hopefully his family's able to recover. But that was just kind of one of the major MMA news bulletins that popped up over the weekend as well, besides UFC 281, obviously.
Yeah, it literally happened the day after. So you got to send a condolences to the friends and families and the loved ones of Anthony Rumble Johnson. Definitely one of the more fearsome punchers in the division, just the amount of power he packed into his hands, you know, him knocking over to Teixeira's two felt within the first 10 seconds of their matchup and getting that quick knockout victory in that fight, just really being up there with the Francis Ngannous and the Derek Lewis's and the Shane Carwins when it really just comes to just pure power. So definitely rest in peace to one of the more intimidating figures in the sport.
No, absolutely. Like I said, it's a sad moment because I think everyone remembered he was a heavyweight fighter at one point. Then he went all the way down the middle. I mean, the guy was an excellent fighter and did a lot of great things in the sport, not only in the mat, but outside of the sport too. Like, that dude was a very great philanthropist and really, really helped the sport grow. And like I said, it's a big loss for the sport. And I hope that, like I said, hope fighters already have come out and support and try to help his family and the people that he trained with. I hope they continue to do that.
That on that note, obviously very sad to see and never want to see anybody taken that young. We are going to wrap things up here. So Rev, I know we just did this since we're recording our shows back to back here tonight, but one more time for these listeners, where can they find your stuff, both on your social medias and then on Belly Up as well?
Hey, I haven't ruined anything in over a week, but you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Rev Coca. I haven't been promoting my Instagram on these shows, but I'm going to now since it seems like Twitter could be going down any second. So I'm going to promote those. You can find me at Rev Coca on both of those websites. And whenever I write something, you can find it on the Belly Up Sports website. I'll repost it on both those, both on Twitter and on Instagram. So whenever I post something, you'll know and you'll see it there.
Definitely be sure to check out his stuff. Rev's a great writer, and he's my co-host for the Top of the Mountain, which we're going to have a few more episodes at least. Hopefully either Colorado School of Mines or CSU Pueblo will continue on. But if you are listening to this show and you haven't checked out the new Top of the Mountain episode, getting ready for the first round of the playoffs, so please go do so. Be sure to follow at FEOTB Pod. Follow wherever you're listening to your podcast currently. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. Been slacking a little bit with that, but it's going to start picking back up. I'm coming up on a couple of different holiday breaks. So I'm going to have a little bit of extra time.
Yeah. You bet your ass. We got some World Cup stuff to talk about next week too. So we held off on that, but hey, if you're listening to this, I want to give a winner out. I've been giving winners out, Jimmy. I don't know if you noticed. I'm five in a row. Yeah. I'm losing tonight though, unfortunately, cause I hit the under for whatever dumb reason I did that. But if you want a winner, the last three World Cup winners have lost in the group stage. Italy in 2010, which they're the 2006 World Cup champions, Spain in 2014, and Germany in 2018. France right now to lose in the group stage, it's a long shot, plus 5,000 odds. You want to take a winger? Take a swing at it. And like I said, I'll cover that a lot more as we go into next week and the next coming weeks. So, yeah, the World Cup's one of my favorite favorite time to watch the sport because of all the international ties. And that's why I love UFC also too, because it's the different cultures all come in together. So yeah, you bet your ass we'll be covering all that.
And I know we took a bye week this week, but when we go back to our normal episodes, we'll have the pick 'em. We'll talk about the NFL for the last couple of weeks. I was looking at the scoreboard when we were trying to decide we were going to be recording late again. And I saw it was like only three teams that were both over 500 that had legitimate playoff hopes playing each other. I was like, might be a good time for a bye week. It's
oh yeah, Raiders Broncos this week, Jimmy. I just cannot fucking wait to watch that in the snow.
Yeah. Well, it's gonna be rough. But thank you everyone for tuning in. Thank you once again to Rev for coming back on and talking about the UFC. This has been a little bonus hit of the Far End of the Bench podcast with myself, Jimmy Pilato, my co-host Nico Bryant, and our guest Rev the Problem Coca. Thank you guys for listening. We will see you next week.
Peace.
If you don't stay down and you never quit, come on over here and sit on the far end of the bench.